We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
All right, hello! Welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I am Matt Harvey, your host, and as always, the suppository of all wisdom. It is a new year, new episode. That's right, we're finally getting around to making a new episode after a little bit of a hiatus towards the end of December, the start of January. And we're starting the year by celebrating in the most secular way we can by acknowledging Nobel Prize Day, a celebration that we missed due to taking a break at the end of December. Instead of focusing on the incredible work of the Nobel Prize recipients, we will look at Alfred Nobel, the dynamite salesman who was so despised in his lifetime that when newspapers confused his brother's death for his own and wrote an obituary, it stated, "The Merchant of Death is dead." And then went on to say, Dr. Alfred Nobel, who became rich by finding ways to kill more people faster than ever before, died yesterday. Ugh, a brutal takedown of a scientist who absolutely deserved it. At which point, he desperately attempted to change his public image with charity washing. He allocated 2.8 million euros for the creation of the Nobel Awards and to have a full reputation clean. And for only 2.8 million, that is a bargain, I will say. He's got a really good deal. Even if you count for inflation, because with inflation, a modern reputation rehab will cost someone around, I don't know, 44 billion. And it won't even guarantee that more people will like them or forget the horrible things that they've done. In fact, it might even just solidify the things that they already thought about you as you continuously prove them correct in poor decision after poor decision. How much would you be willing to spend on a fresh reputation rehab? Send your answers to the Scott Morrison Harmless Daggy Dad Persona Memoriam Museum along with a pair of shit-stained pants that definitely aren't yours, care of the local member of Cook's office. Just quickly before we get into the episode, I am of course going on tour. I'm doing a bit of a 2023 tour with my show Wage Against the Machine, my storytelling show, which is all about destructive workplaces that I have worked in, exploitative workplaces that I have been exploited by. It includes my story about my $20,000 robo-debt and the time that I saved 18 people's lives and broke a 100-year-old roller coaster at the same time. If you want to hear any of those stories, if you like this podcast, I think you'll enjoy the material that's in that show. I am currently doing the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, the Newcastle Fringe, and the Wellington Fringe. And tickets for all of those are on sale right now, so you can pick up some tickets if you want to. And my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, has been picked up by the San Diego International Fringe, which I'm very excited about, giving me a chance to go somewhere new and perform for a whole bunch of new crowds and audiences and take my silly little show about four stupid true stories on the road. But until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. Let's start off with the headlines. It's that time of the year where we all get angry at language for reflecting back at us the things that we talked about all year. But now, we are trying to move on, language, so why are you bringing all this back up again, hey? As the words of the year are released. First up, according to the Associated Press, gaslighting is the Merriam-Webster's word of the year for 2022. But I am pretty sure that you're just imagining that. Why would they do that? Why would they pick that word? Pretty sure you're wrong about that. Maybe just think about it for a little bit longer. the Oxford Dictionary has gone in a completely different direction, choosing Goblin Mode as Word of the Year. Goblin Mode, for those who don't know, a type of behaviour which is unapologetically self-indulgent, lazy, slovenly, or greedy, typically in a way that rejects social norms or expectations. It appears the Oxford Dictionary has been taking suggestions from the Tory party this year. They have had a long history of going goblin mode, surprisingly ahead of their time action for the notoriously nostalgic and past-focused party. Collins Dictionary is a bit more focused on the now, choosing perma-crisis as word of the year for the year of our disaster 2022. According to the dictionary, it sums up just about how truly awful 2022 has been for so many people, and should make a fitting epitaph for society as the last ever word of the year before society completely collapsed. Australia, as ever, is focused on issues at home, with their choice of teal as word of the year by Macquarie Dictionary. Teal was chosen because future dystopian housecape is a little bit on the nose and frankly, a bit of a mouthful. If we talk teal, we can pretend the climate crisis isn't the largest problem of our lifetimes that we've been ignoring for near on a decade because it was convenient and people paid us money to look the other way. Also, we can pretend the reason the reins of power changed was because of a conspiracy. And you know, pretending is really fun. Just really enjoy pretending. Now, a 32-year-old man in Turkey was reportedly shot and killed by his own dog after the canine stepped on the trigger of a shotgun and it fired at him. In a preemptive statement, the NRA has declared the era of dogs being man's best friend over and declared man's new best friend guns. Republicans rushing to be on message declared that this dog was simply one bad boy and shouldn't let one bad boy ruin it for the rest of us. They would, however, stop this menace by arming all good boys, saying the only thing that can stop a bad boy with a gun is a good boy with a gun. Daniel Andrews has doubled down on his refusal to consider legalizing marijuana, saying that he has no plans to legalize marijuana beyond medical use, saying drug-induced psychosis was a significant issue for some in the community. As much as I'd love to see marijuana legalized in Victoria, it's hard to say there hasn't been an increase of psychosis due to drugs in the Melbourne streets, specifically down Bourke Street, up Elizabeth Street, then up Flinders Street, where the cops will usually disperse them until about a week passes. A landmark climate case in Queensland has found plans of a company owned by Clive Palmer to dig Australia's largest thermal coal mine in central Queensland infringe upon the human rights of future generations. This is new for Palmer, who is used to only dismissing the rights of present generations. This is one of a number of legal battles Palmer has been at the centre of recently, and if it continues, the only thing Palmer will be mining in the future is a mountain of legal fees. Scott Morrison has been censured over his self-appointment to 5 portfolios during the height of the global pandemic, which he kept secret from the public and many of his own cabinet colleagues. Following the successful censure, the Parliament called for an official finger-waggling, some semi-official tutting, and lots of informal whispering in the halls. Upon hearing the vote was coming up, Morrison tried to swear himself into as many seats as he could, but lacked the power. Failing that, Morrison defended himself by saying it didn't matter that he'd sworn himself into 5 extra ministries, as he didn't do any of those jobs, as well as not doing his own as PM. An ABC investigation has identified at least 12 million Australians have had their data exposed by hackers in recent months, and that material that is widely available on the internet, ranging from sensitive legal contracts to the login details of individual MyGov accounts, are being sold for as little as $1. Looks like even hackers observe the ancient tradition of Cyber Monday deals. This doesn't do a lot for the self-esteem of millennials who already struggle with self-worth. But to be priced so low by a hacker, that's a new low, man. That's a new low. I mean, if we could afford the therapy, we'd have so much to unpack over this, but you know how it is. Labor has promised more secure work and better pay after Independent Senator David Pocock agreed to back the workplace legislation overhaul and enshrine multi-employer bargaining. On the plus side, at least we'll be able to afford our own chains so that we can lock ourselves to the office furniture when our boss inevitably tries to lay us off for stealing money from the company. And by stealing money, of course, I mean be being paid too high. Unsurprisingly, opposition workplace relations spokesman Michaela Cash said she was disappointed a deal had been struck on the bill, warning businesses would be unfairly affected by the changes. As from now on, they'd be expected to partake in this new thing called paying your employees. In maybe the Frenchest story ever, President Emmanuel Macron said young people in France will be able to get condoms free of charge in 2023 in an effort to reduce the spread of sexually transmitted diseases. To help promote the campaign, the city will be covering the Eiffel Tower in a giant prophylactic and will be renamed the City of No Glove, No Love. It sounds better when you say it in French, to be fair. It has been revealed that Scott Morrison is looking to the world global speaking circuit for his next step should he find himself suddenly dealing with the consequences of all his previous actions. His rebrand was pitched, making him a virtuous globalization mastermind in a pitch think tank, the Hudson Institute. A stunning rebrand for a guy who couldn't even negotiate the delivery of vaccines for Australians during a pandemic after being directly contacted by the head of Pfizer. Hudson's major donors include multinational weapons companies Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, and it received over $100,000 in funding from one Rupert Murdoch, who also sits on its chairman's advisory board. At least with all these soulless cunts working to actively worsen the state of humanity, it'd be like he never left the Liberal Party. He even has the same boss, which, you know, always makes transitioning into a new workplace much easier. Researchers at the University of Southern Denmark investigated the noise-making techniques of Dalbinthen's bat and found some bats use the same vocal structures as death metal singers to make their unique vocalizations. Which means, if you think about it, everyone doing the gravelly Batman voice is correct and doing a perfect impression of a bat. As long as they specify, "I'm Dalbinthen Batman!" A little more clunky, I understand, but worth it to avoid the pedantry, really. Batman wishes to keep up his no-kill policy. Between January 2020 and September 2022, Twitter suspended more than 11,000 accounts for breaking COVID misinformation rules and removed almost 100,000 pieces of content that violated those rules, according to statistics published by Twitter. The policy even received acclaim from medical professionals being cited as an example of what companies should do to combat misinformation. For starters, who saw that coming? What a big surprise that is. Twitter, the room where nothing happens but everything is shouted about, praised by medical professionals for dispelling misinformation. Just a shock. You have to be a real idiot or some sort of egomaniac to turn it off for any reason. So it shouldn't surprise any of us. Twitter will no longer enforce its long-standing COVID misinformation policy. Elon's already decided their next big move, directly infecting his staff and sending them over to nursing homes across the country so they can get that hands-on experience. They're calling the initiative No Pensioner Left Alive. A Los Angeles girl named Madeline got her wish when she asked a local animal control authorities for a license to own a unicorn, if she's able to find one. The problem is, unicorns in LA are the only things harder to find than a parking spot. This story, however, did spark the interest of couples looking to spice up their relationship and have asked Madeline, if she finds a unicorn, who is GGG, to give him a call. Please. Please. So far, Thrinder hasn't really been panning out quite how they'd hoped. It's hard to find a good unicorn these days. Just before Taiwan's local election, Hualien County police officer was heard broadcasting messages at the cemetery, urging the deceased to tell their offspring not to engage in election bribery and other illegal activities. Apparently they were afraid the polling station would be occupied by poltergeists. Yes, pow, pow, pow. You're welcome, guys. But filling out their bullet sheets, authorities were dead set against ghosts exercising their former rights to vote, even if the power of bribes compelled them, as they wished it to remain a vote of confidence. District of Columbia attorney General Carl Racine has sued Amazon for using drivers' tips to pay their standard wages, attempting to exact a punishment that federal consumer protection agencies couldn't last year after a lawsuit asserted it had withheld more than $60 million, or about one-third of total customer tips. At this point, Amazon is just a giant workplace exploitation manufacturer. They are constantly ahead of the game when it comes to new and depressing ways to ensure that their workers are having a terrible time for as little money as possible. From 2016 to 2019, Amazon Flex prompted customers to leave tips with the promise that 100% of the money would be given to drivers. But this was only technically true because it was using the money to subsidize the base payment the drivers were promised. See, this is why people don't like pedantry. When you're actually eating someone into poverty so that you can fly yourself to space, it doesn't fill people with confidence that you will keep them safe in your space factories. Oh, we did give them 100% of the oxygen you tipped for our workers, but we did extract the tipped amount from the company supply of oxygen. You understand, oxygen doesn't just grow on trees, guys. To celebrate the anniversary of January 6th, a US appeals court struck down a rule the Trump administration adopted in 2017 that banned bump stock devices that allow people to rapidly fire multiple rounds from semi-automatic guns. Look, it makes sense when you realize that the court said that it was up to the US Congress rather than the president to take action. And while when it comes to Trump, it generally seems like a good idea, but this was maybe the one good thing that he did in 4 years. Either that or being so monstrously incompetent that it inspired people to vote in record numbers. A legacy is a legacy, and he didn't seem too fussy about what his legacy would be, as long as he got one. A college student created an app that can tell whether AI wrote an essay. Sorry, that story again. A goody-two-shoes snitch doesn't want the quote-unquote lazy stupid kids to have it easier than he did. And that is the end of headlines for today. Let's get into the bigger stories. Starting with reporting from the front line of the culture war news. Perpetual outrage machine The Daily Wire has released a bombshell new report on a study in which researchers have shown that no biological evidence for gender identity exists. So checkmate, woke brigade. Stick that in your hurt feelings and smoke it. Time to pack it in and stop trying to make trans people feel all welcome, like they're members of society. Ooh. We tried, but too many people got confused. Sure, a lot of them did it on purpose, but the people have spoken. Sorry, trans people, pack it up and go back into masking your assigned gender at birth. Nothing we can do. I just wish that someone had told us that gender and by extension gender identity couldn't be measured, that no objective measurement for imaging of the human body exists for gender identity, as gender identity is part of a person's subjective experience, and so it wouldn't be able to be measured anyway. Oh, if only there were someone of note and expertise, like behavioral neuroscientist Sari Van Anders, who argued that the relationship between sex, gender, and biology has long been understood to be more than a simple male or female binary. That gender is a socio-cultural, which is a coastal elitist word for relating to or involving a combination of social and cultural factors. So basically it's it only exists because we say it exists, you know, like race and money. And if we were getting rid of ideas because we made them up, then like, I am all for removing money from the equation, but I don't hear anybody talking about how there's a paper that proving that money doesn't really exist. For those in the intellectual nosebleed section, let me break it down for you. Gender identity simply refers to things like clothing, behavior, and whether someone acts according to a feminine or masculine norm. Of course, you can't identify that in the brain. There is no gene for fashion. But sadly, there is no proof that Sari Van Anders even exists. As I subscribe to all solipsistic existence, and as far as I know, I not only invented Sari Van Anders, but created you, the doubter of Van Anders, to give her someone, to give her life's work meaning. So she can't exist in order to confirm that what exactly shapes a person's gender is still unknown to science. What a terrible, horrible shame. If only numerous instruments for assessing gender identity as a clinical measure existed, such as questionnaire-based, interview-based, and task-based assessments. But if I know doctors, and I'm pretty sure I do, they just take every patient at their word and will give them whatever they ask for, no questions asked. Doctors have never once questioned a patient's claims about not only their physical health, but their mental health. They just recklessly fill people with pills and cut off whole sections of their body without even a second question. You come in and you say, oh, doc, oh, I'm so tired of my toes. They make me feel out of place in my body. Can we just cut them off? And they will, right then and there, that afternoon. But it's really more of a problem with doctors than it is with anything else. Oh wait, hang on, this just coming in. Breaking news, guys, breaking news. No, dummies, gender doesn't exist. We've literally been telling you this for years. And as there is no such thing as gender outside of a shared cultural idea, there can be no measure for gender identity, which is simply one's own internal sense of self and their gender. Whether that is a man, a woman, neither, both, or sort of somewhere in between on that spectrum. Yet, now that it seems like you can use it to win your culture war battle, you are on board with the idea that it isn't measurable in any way. That it is more of a shared idea between some hairless apes. Well, this is gonna blow your tiny minds as well. There's no biological evidence for race. This must be why so many of us continue to insist that Jesus was white, despite living in the Middle East. Yet, you still insist on using race as a measure of oppressing people who look different to you. And, this is gonna get you again, there is biological evidence of sex. It sits between your legs, your private bits, your innie and outie bits, your sewage and pleasure factory, your sex organs. Team your sex organs. And yet, sexism runs rampant! So it really strikes me that you don't need something to exist or not to use it as the basis for attempting to keep somebody down. Moving on now to healthy future news. New Zealand, idealized Australia, has made news recently as it became the woke center of the universe after they banned tobacco sales for the next generation. Which generation is this? Are you involved? Is this PC madness gone wild? Well, calm down. Anyone born on or after January 1st, 2009, will be banned from buying tobacco products to prevent them from combusting into a community of smoke monsters, forming a collective and then becoming the island that the TV series Lost is based on. Look, I liked Lost, but we don't need a reboot of Lost, okay? The ban is aimed at preventing future generations from taking up smoking and is part of a wider government push to make the country smoke-free by 2025. We'll note that this doesn't include the smoke blown up your ass by most politicians, but one step at a time. The new law will also slash the number of retailers licensed to sell tobacco from 6,000 to 600 by the end of 2023. With violations of the new law being punishable by fines of up to 150,000 New Zealand dollars. Wow! That's enough money to buy a slightly better than budget apocalypse bunker. But be warned, your basic bunker only includes a bunk bed, basic air filtration systems, and kitchen counter. Doesn't sound like there is a big enough storage facility to run a secret underground cigarette empire out of it, inspiring the next great prestigious New Zealand drama about a school teacher turned cigarette seller after years of taking cigarettes from his students. Bunking bad! You can at least use the cigarettes as the new world currency to inspire others to help you overthrow the billionaires attempting to escape the apocalypse in their own luxury bunkers somewhere on the soil of New Zealand. Look, I'm just putting it out there. If you're gonna ban anything in the country to keep the population safe, maybe consider banning billionaire investment in bunkers. That will save them from the end of the world, thus incentivizing them to be more responsible with the planet so that they don't need an apocalypse bunker. But I digress. Some facts. Smoking rates in New Zealand are already amongst the lowest in the world, are falling, having decreased from 9.4 to 8% in the past 12 months. And according to the Ministry of Health, New Zealand's smoking rate is now the lowest since records began, with 56,000 smokers quitting in the past year. Which really means that New Zealand is setting out to show you how much better than you it really thinks it is. Look, I'm happy for you to want to keep your citizens safe and alive, but do you have to do it with an unspoken sense of moral superiority? At least try to rub it in our faces instead of just quietly achieving greatness. However, vaping, which the new legislation does not cover, remains popular and totally cool among the youth. With official data showing 8.3% of adults are now vaping daily, up from 6.2% in the past year. Ha! Got 'em! So maybe as long as the existence of vaping is still a thing, we won't really have a generation safe from the dangers of tobacco. And there will be those who argue the blanket banning of cigarette sales will simply drive them underground, making them illegal, thus making them cool again. So I have an alternative solution to the problem of smoking. We split the country into smoking and non-smoking. It's already two separate islands. I refuse to count Stewart Island as being part of the equation. Fuck Stewart Island. This will include vaping, because vaping is smoking for the stupid. People are tricking themselves into thinking this is healthy smoking. They probably also believe in clean coal, and trickle-down economics, and NFTs being the future of money. So you want to get rid of those dummies. We'll call it Pleasure Island, but we will know that it's Scam Island, Dummy Island, and like Pleasure Island in Pinocchio, we sit back and we watch as they turn themselves into a bunch of asses. I guess South Island can be Dummy Island. No disrespect, South Island, but you could do with a bit of a population boost and some corporate investment, and sending the scammers there will increase the population, and the cigarette companies will be forced to invest heavily in the new cities as they need somewhere to peddle their deadly wares. We just can't stop selling things that are bad for people and cause record amounts of death. That'd be communism, socialism. What are we scared of at the moment? What are we scared of these days? Whatever it is, it'd be that. And that'd be bad. Moving on now to potato news. Australia is looking down the brink of a civil war as one of our oldest rivalries is being publicly stoked by a US mega corporation. A place where more workers learn to shit with a smile than any other workplace. McDonald's. Yeah, that's right. McDonald's Australia just announced the latest addition to its menu, potato scallops, or as they are rightly known, potato cakes. And no, potato fritters, you aren't in this, so just back the fuck up. This threat of accepting mild cultural differences between the states is too much for Australians of all walks of life to handle. From the usual suspects, the closed-minded bigots, all the way over to the open-minded bigots. Even us here at the Bearer of Weird News are divided on the matter of fried potatoes and will defend to the death our right to lock you in an island prison camp for being different from the rest of us, the only true Anglo-Australian tradition left. Though this culture war has neglected to embrace the most important part of the potato cake buying interaction, the bonus potato cake. A staple of fish and chipperies since time began, the bonus potato cake is man's true best friend, even greater than the dog. As such, we will have to settle this the only way our country knows how, with sports! The All-Australian Potato Cup. You get to pick from your best athletes or appropriate representatives for the various states. And no, we won't be including potato fritter as an option. I already said, back the fuck up. The cup will consist of a distinct series of uniquely Australian sports and activities to decide the name of the product for the next year for the entire country. There'll be AFL, rugby, cricket, surfing, state corruption. It's much like Monopoly there. There are two ways to play state corruption. Either most corruption or least corruption, and it is determined by the current title holder, of course. The beer can regatta, four square, boomerang throwing, wood chopping, and number of News Corp owned news outlets. A sport known colloquially as the intellect chop. But at least we can all come together and roast the potato fritter people. As a minority, they don't have the numbers nor control of one of the major cities. So huzzah for unity. Moving on now to democracy news. To celebrate the 2-year anniversary of the American January 6th riot, Brazil has gone and done a Brazilian reboot of the infamous event. Only 2 days late and using local celebrities, so inevitably it was never going to get as much media attention as the original, despite the large-scale production values. You can really see the money on the table here. Have a look at that. That looks like it's a Brazilian extras right there. Typical Americano-centric media landscape, really. There were, however, some significant changes to the Brazilian remake that makes it stand out from the American original. While in both versions the powers of creeping fascism have seen a temporary setback and the courts have started punishing those who were involved, but Brazil's Supreme Court has not only started to do it in a much more efficient way, they've actually agreed to include Bolsonaro in the investigation. That is very impressive. Obviously, this was never going to happen to Trump as he's still president, according to increasingly disparate segments of the American population. He is still president and America has two presidents like there are two popes. But only one of those presidents gets to actually make decisions and have any kind of power, while the other one is no longer president. It is the first time that Bolsonaro has been named among those potentially responsible for the January 8th riots. Supreme Court Judge Alexandre de Moraes announced Bolsonaro would be included in the probe into what the Office of the Prosecutor General said was the instigation and intellectual authorship of the rioting. And this does give context for why Trump hasn't been included in the charges over January 6th. At least, not yet. As nobody could reasonably describe him as either intellectual or an author, even though he has released a book. Seems democracy is coming to the end of its roughly 16 centuries of staggered popularity, with notable exceptions from country to country, but that's the thing about democracy. Not everyone has to be on board for it to work. Populism is giving a popular replacement at odds on favourite for the new order, though it is easy to be favourite when you just tell people what they want to hear, regardless of the logic, consistency, and the general restrictions imposed by living within the boundaries of reality. As long as we take down the elites and remember that the elites definitely doesn't include the person here talking to you who has enough money for a presidential/prime ministerial campaign, only the other people with that kind of money. With notable dark horse socialism, or some variation of it, be it democratic socialism, socialist democracy, or the People's Front of Socialism, despite the underdog status of socialism, its growing popularity among the young and the exploited, it just can't seem to make a breakthrough at the top end of the spectrum. And short of a socialist revolution, it just seems that it might get caught up in the reeds of trying to make a just society while populism runs wild. It's going to be an interesting few years as the surviving vestiges of authoritarianism are scattered among the countries, pounding their chests and refusing to be ignored, and the weird love affair with capitulating to the higher power, allowing some monarchies to remain even in simply ceremonial positions that only occasionally impose their will and power on otherwise democratic societies, living the life of a socialist parasite in a golden-clad palace and allowing others to starve in the streets while simultaneously denouncing dictators for not looking after their people. Australia, in an almost unprecedented break from branding, has gone from the small dog following the larger dog in the Looney Tunes cartoons asking, well, who are we going to go to war today, huh? Who are we going to go to war today, huh? 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 And then getting slapped in the face, to maybe being their own person for once, by proposing a fine of $14,000 for politicians who claim election fraud. This is proposed by independent MP and Abbott Slayer, Zali Stegall, who made the proposal with the intention of holding Australian politicians who falsely claim election fraud to account, with fines and the possibility of being forced to publicly retract their statements. And if there are two things that politicians hate, it's spending their own money and not being allowed to double down on nonsense. After anti-lockdown protesting in Victoria resulted in open threats to kill politicians in Melbourne, Stegall was inspired to use crossbench power to get the proposition through. After she realised the people that she had been involved with pushing out of power were the kinds of people who were likely to casually drop a few veiled references to a conspiracy theory and dog whistle up some support from the worst people, the absolute worst people. And would like some protections in place, just in case. While the Greens have thrown their weight behind the idea, the plan does face some roadblocks, with Jackie Lambie saying she's not sure if we'd nailed the model, and non-commitment from the Labor Party. Which can't be too much of a surprise given Labor's major argument against the coalition is they're lying to you! And holding politicians to claims about elections is one step closer to holding them accountable to anything that they might say in Parliament. And if a politician goes into Parliament and doesn't lie, did they even go into Parliament? The question of our ages. It's about time politicians are being held to account for the things that they say, and this seems like a flawless system where it would cover, say, false accusations of election fraud on social media, provided that they were statements of fact rather than statements of opinion. Ah, there it is. The old statements of opinion defense, meaning politicians and Sky News / Fox News have finally got the excuse that they need to merge and become one multifaceted, single-minded engine of deception designed by committee to maximize your fear and ply you into accepting larger and larger levels of bullshit. But not even the fun kinds of bullshit, the kind that wants to separate you from your sense of class solidarity, your money, your sense of identity, your cash, your understanding of who is really out to get you, and of course, your finances. Don't forget to subscribe to the Patreon and come to see my live shows, or else immigrants will come and steal your cash-in-hand jobs and claim the dole at the same time. You'll be forced to pick fruit for them! Looking at body news now, Colorado! The place that you really only know because of South Park. A Colorado funeral home operator who has been accused of illegally selling body parts and giving clients fake ashes was sentenced to 20 years in prison. That story again. The world missed out on a new Sondheim play today when a Colorado funeral home operator was charged with selling body parts and giving clients fake ashes. Ah, Sondheim would have loved that as a play concept. Oh, sure, you're all outraged by this now, but if this were a Netflix series by Tim Burton about an aging Wednesday Addams who has found her place in the world running a kooky funeral home, you'd suddenly be all on board for this idea. Federal prosecutor said Megan Hess, seen here looking like a cheap American reboot of Captain Kim, received the maximum sentence after pleading guilty to mail fraud in November under a plea agreement in which other charges against her were dropped. The federal case was triggered by a 2016 to 2018 Reuters investigative series about the sale of body parts in the US, which is apparently a virtually unregulated industry. Former workers told Reuters that Hess and her mother, Shirley Koch, conducted unauthorized dismemberments of bodies. I'm pretty sure unauthorized dismemberments of bodies is the headlining band for the Tim Burton Festival of Oddities and Outcasts this year. A few weeks after the story was published, the FBI then raided their business. US authorities said the pair transferred bodies or body parts to third parties for research without family's knowledge and were charged with 6 counts of mail fraud and 3 counts of illegal transportation of hazardous materials. The shipments went through the mail or on commercial air flights in violation of Department of Transport regulations regarding the transportation of hazardous materials. Look, if you're looking for reasons to hate this person, this might be the one. This sort of unbiased trust in the system, sending body parts through the mail. I barely trust the regular mail to get my non-important letters of general acquaintance to the intended destination. If I was going to the trouble of deceiving my customers by removing body parts against their wishes, I'd probably find a driver who I could trust to keep their mouth shut and their eyes on the road. A grand jury indictment said that from 2010 through to 2018, Hess and Koch offered to cremate bodies and provide the remains to families at a cost of $1,000 or more. But many of the cremations never occurred. And obviously that is terrible. You can't offer a discount cremation and not deliver. But the ones who got their discount, that is a fucking bargain. I probably lost a bunch of you there, and I am doubling down on this, so skip ahead now if you must, you cowards. While this funeral home operator is far from perfect, and her methods had issues, I think the real story here is that the average cremation cost is between $4,000 and $7,000, depending on the type of cremation. And the minimum wage has stagnated over the last 30 years, causing people to need to get a discount crematorium in the first place. Not to mention the funeral industry as a whole is an industry of vampires taking advantage of people in mourning. But we're not talking about that, are we? No! Apparently the white ladies are above reproach for their predatory practices. Hess even created a non-profit organization in 2009 called Sunset Mesa Funeral Foundation as a body broker service, doing business as donor services, even offering free of charge cremations in exchange for body part donations in some cases. Now, it's hard to talk any further about this stuff until you, the audience, understand why they did it. People are painting them out to be ghouls. But Hess's attorney told the court she was motivated by a desire to advance medical research. And after the years of anti-science diatribe that I've seen all over the news, this new pro-science at all costs approach is somewhat refreshing. I haven't seen this level of dedication to advancing science at all costs since Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, or the modern Prometheus. Now, people are accusing her of profiteering off the dead, but the issue is the legal system and the collapse of the economy necessitating a side hustle culture. See, in the US, it is legal to donate organs, but not to sell them. But it is illegal to donate body parts like arms and legs. Instead, you have to sell them. In most states, anyone can legally purchase body parts. Apparently, in the investigation, a Tennessee broker sold Reuters a cervical spine and two human heads just after a few email exchanges. I mean, at least Hess was getting them into science labs, not just collecting them to see if she could, Reuters. Otherwise, it sounds to me like Hess would absolutely have donated them for science. She did start a non-profit after all. There are some issues, of course. Nobody is perfect. Hess and Koch also shipped bodies and body parts that tested positive for and belonged to people who died from infectious diseases, including HIV, hepatitis B, and C, despite certifying to buyers that the remains were disease-free. That is obviously an issue. Several relatives who had used Hess for cremations later learned that they had received bags of mixed ashes with the remains of other people. And this, if nothing else, is completely unnecessary. I have no idea how many ashes a body will produce. If you took an entire leg, I definitely wouldn't know about it. There is no need to be mixing and matching ashes. This is a classic example of the burden of knowledge getting the better of professionals. Because Hess was aware how much ashes a human body should make. So she assumed that others also knew. We don't know, guys. We have no idea. Fix up the laws, regulate the industry, and fix the economy so people can afford a funeral. And it sounds like these problems would have solved themselves. But as usual, we're blaming the individuals for systemic problems. Let's move away from that a little bit now. I feel like I maybe lost some of you on that one. Let's go on to desperate aging economy news. Tourism Australia, the only body in Australia who saw Scott Morrison for what he truly was years ago and fired him. Australia's tourism body wants to lift working holiday visa age limits to 50. Currently, the working holiday visa is only eligible for people 35 years and under because Australia needs strong backs and people who have yet to be crushed by the world who would be willing to trek into the regions to pick our fruit. After all, why would anybody who works here do it? We've seen the news about how little they pay. After all, we do know the farmer's motto, shut up and stop expecting money. But if you get people who are desperate enough, well, they will take one for the team in order not to go back home. Home, in most instances, being the freezing cold UK. Though the coalition signed the UK-Australia Free Trade Agreement, so now British backpackers will no longer need 88 days of farm work in order to extend their working holiday visas from at least 2024. I believe it was part of their new plans to force people on welfare to go do some form of national service, but they were voted out before they had the chances to fully implement that plan, thankfully. As a result, Australia's peak tourism body wants the working holiday visa age cutoff to be lifted to provide a wider range of skilled workers and professionals. So they say, and we can talk all day about conducting migration reviews to find ways of addressing worker shortages across Australia. But the truth of the matter is, we are going very far out of our way to avoid solving the quote-unquote worker shortage crisis by the simplest method: paying workers a living wage. It's an economic theory called Occam's paycheck. The simplest solution is often the correct one, built off the popular Occam's razor theory of not complicating things. For example, if you hear hooves, think horses, not zebras, unless you're in Africa or the Africa section of the zoo, of course. But that's the much less popular extension of the theory. Usually it just ends at the zebras bit. Applying it to economics to create the Occam's paycheck argument, it'd read, when you hear worker shortage, think pay a living wage, not complicated trade deal. But Tourism and Transport Forum Australia chief executive Margie Osman said Australia could get more benefits out of the program by lifting the age eligibility rules to 50. And she's not wrong. The way the economy is going, and with the amount of people desperate enough to both work for Amazon and take on an Uber self-employment opportunity, it is clear that the desperation levels have lifted significantly. Changes to the working holiday program would allow backpackers to work with a single employer for the length of their visa, and call for rules requiring backpackers to work in the agriculture sector for 3 months to extend the length of their visa are expected to be expanded into other industries. The shift in instability and workplace insecurity is enough that we can get the usually more secure and confident members of the workforce to partake in more grunt work, maybe even use them as a wedge to drive the value of casual labour down so that the people who rely on that work will be compelled into longer term work or to expect worse working conditions in exchange for their security. And don't even think of asking for better working conditions or a living wage. We will just run up the cost of properties until nobody can afford to live where the jobs are, and you will need to commute an hour or maybe an hour and a half to and from work, not allowing you the time needed for you to search for better work. So secure work conditions and a living wage.
Hey there, buddy, how are you?
And finally, legal pirate news! Belarus, the former Soviet country, turned independent country, but you'd still definitely call them the country equivalent of having a street affectionately known as Little Russia. Belarus's digital piracy laws have recently been adjusted so that piracy against all software, movies, music, and television shows owned by rights holders in unfriendly countries has been legalized. Of course, the first and only Belarusian president, Alexander Lukashenko, unless you ask the UK, the US, and the EU, Lukashenko prefers the term open access artistic expression for unfriendly countries. As an artist in Australia, this might seem as a childish stance to take against foreign countries' artists who barely get paid as it is. But remember that Australians barely support Australian artists, so we don't need foreign interference to mess with our arts revenue. The new laws allow for pirate use of films, music, and computer programs from unfriendly countries. The Belarusian legislator explains this decision with the need to develop the intellectual, spiritual, and moral potential of society. Well, I understand this completely. I have developed my moral and spiritual potential by ignoring the rights of big box stores to not be shoplifted from. We all have our little slices of the law that we will continue to ignore no matter how much they crack down. It's all part of the moral relativism that we enjoy so much, be it weed, pirating movies and music, or a few of us plundering from the poorest members of society to build ourselves a soft bed of excess money to lay back on. It's all relative. Until someone brings out the guillotine, of course. According to the new law signed by Belarusian dictator Alexander Lukashenko on January 3rd, importing goods without the sanction of the copyright owner is not considered a crime. So this is a little complicated, as while the law strips IP holders of their copyright with Belarus, they can still get paid for pirated content, eventually, at a bit of a price. The law stipulates that consumers still have to pay for the material. I know, boo! Paying for artists and their work, boo! They should just be like politicians and do it because they believe in the work that they do, because they believe in changes, like decriminalizing piracy, not to make money, boo! Belarus's National Patent Authority will collect and hold paid funds for 3 years during that time. Rights holders can claim their money. However, rights holders will not set the price of goods and costs won't follow fair market rules and trends. Instead, the government will set the prices. And I've never heard of a market where government interference has caused prices to skyrocket or destabilization to run rampant, so I'm feeling pretty good about this one. Also, if the IP owner does not claim its money within the 3-year time frame, the government keeps it. Although it's unclear whether officials will inform rights holders of any of the held funds, and even if they do, it might not even matter as ongoing sanctions prevent the Belarus Bank in Minsk, the NPA state-run bank, from doing business with Western countries. And I'd be worried for them, as Hollywood is full of very dangerous individuals, like martial arts monster Steven Seagal. And you don't want to invoke the wrath of Steven Seagal, the 7th Dan, former Navy SEAL and former military man. The 7th Dan and man who formerly played a Navy SEAL and played a military man. Yeah, that's actually correct. But fortunately, Seagal has gone all in for Russia and has been seen in Ukraine spreading Russian propaganda. So it'll work out well for him. He can still keep all of his rights and the government will not need to get involved. But seeing as IP owners, assuming they can get their money, will have to forfeit up to 20% to the government as a fee, supposedly covering the management and accounting expenses of the NPA and Belarus Bank, Lukashenko has risked the wrath of Disney. You think that you can take the mouse's money, Lukashenko, and there won't be any consequences? Currently, Disney has the biggest franchises in the world, making billions of dollars at the box office. And you think you can just swoop in and take 20% of local box office earnings and bounce? Buddy, they will have their secret police drop in under cover of darkness. And the last thing that you will hear on this earth is the secret Disney police asking you, "Oh, you want to be a pirate, do you?" And before you know it, you'll be flayed and draped over one of those skeletons in the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. There is a reason that they have a ride that says, "It's a small world," over and over again. And that is to remind you that there is nowhere that you can hide. That does, of course, bring us to the end of the non-Patreon part of the episode, and thanks for sticking around if you did so. Really appreciate your time, and as always, if you enjoyed the show, please do share it around. Wherever you found us, give us a like, share it with someone you think will enjoy it, and social media, whatever it is that you think will help the show. Please, of course, come out to the live shows. As I said, I'm touring Wage Against the Machine a couple of places, and I'll be in San Diego. If you happen to be in San Diego doing my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey once, and I do look forward to seeing anyone who manages to make it out. Let me know that you listen to the podcast. Always appreciate you when you guys show up. But if you can, please kick in a little at the Patreon. We've got a bonus story on the Patreon, and we'll be sort of putting stuff out like that now. So if you want to support the podcast but can't come out to a live show or don't enjoy going to live shows, that is totally understandable. Kick in a little money at the Patreon and hopefully you'll be able to help us out that way. Until then, look after yourselves, guys, and see you next time. Bye.